Hello again, and welcome to 4Play Radio Sex Therapy. I'm your host, certified sex therapist Lori Watson, author of Wanting Sex Again, and blogger at Psychology Today and WebMD. And I have with me Dr. Adam Matthews, my co-host, who's a couples therapist, psychotherapist, and president of NCAMFT. 4Play is dedicated to helping couples keep it hot. Each episode, we cover an aspect of sex that impacts your sex life and something that you can relate to. So if you find our discussions helpful, please give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. We would love it if you would tell a friend about us. You can find us also on the web at 4playrst.com. And if you have a comment or a topic that you'd like us to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. Please send them to us at info@4playrst.com. Thanks for listening. Now on to today's topic.
Hey, Adam.
Hey, Lori.
How are you?
I am good. We're mixing it up a little bit today. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world, and we feel like we need to talk about it, right?
That's right. The whole stuff with Me Too.
Yeah, and kind of spurred on by Harvey Weinstein's accusations of sexual assault,
right.
And abuse.
With all the actresses, absolutely.
So yeah, a producer who's been accused of all this stuff, and it's kind of sparked a national movement of women coming forth and saying, me too, saying I as well have been a victim of some kind of sexual assault, sexual harassment,
right?
Something in that area, right?
And yeah, and I've got me too on my Facebook
because
I as well, you know, have been a victim of, you know, inappropriate touch and certainly verbal sexual assault. You know, I remember, you know, being a young girl, I was 16, and my boss, you know, first job I ever had, made the most inappropriate sexual comments regularly. And, you know, there were other people working there, women hearing it, older women hearing it, people laughing it off, you know, and I was so naive when I was 16. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was at a five and dime kind of store.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think that you kind of come to accept as a woman. I think it's trying to create some visibility. I think my own personal issue with the Me Too is I want the men who have been sexually assaulted and molested and raped to also put Me Too on their Facebooks. And, you know, because this is not a crime that happens just to women.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something, an assault that happens just to women. It happens to men and boys as well.
It does. Majority to women. But it is with men that it is a growing statistic. But you said something interesting that I think part of what this movement has sparked is the idea that for women anyway, and maybe for a small group of men, but for women, it just becomes a part of natural of everyday life.
Yeah.
Right.
You just start to come to accept. Right. Just realize how do I parry? Is that the word? Right.
Yeah.
How do I dodge, you know, these words, this implication? How do I ignore what I know they're saying, you know, what I know the implication is, but I'm just, you know, I got to get along.
Yeah.
You know, there was one season in my life, you know, I worked with 9 male engineers. So before I was a sex therapist, everybody, I was a software analyst.
Now, and that is typically a pretty big boys club, right?
I worked on
at some point.
I worked on the stealth bomber.
Oh, wow.
In
hydraulics.
I
did not know this about you,
Lori. Yeah.
You worked on the stealth bomber?
I did in aerospace, which is, you know, it's kind of like its own universe. It's this really paranoid place, very male, very testosterone laden. And I was the only female engineer in a group of 9 males.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
It was really tough. I mean, I woke up, I was a newly married person, and I woke up and I had this dream of, this was just when I was learning that dreams meant something, and I had dreamed of being in a torture chamber, and I was being led through the torture chamber to be shown all the tortures that were going to happen. And as I woke up with a start, I realized, this is how I feel about my life every day.
Oh, man.
You know, it felt like a torture going there. I mean, there was sexual harassment and, you know, and harassment simply because I was a woman. I was the best educated. You know, I basically, you know, had more education than any of the men in the department.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was just a lot of put downs and competition. And as aerospace knows, as anybody who has worked in aerospace, there was not enough work. It was like, it was very intermittent.
Mm-hmm.
So in the down times, all you had to do was pick on each other, you know, and being a female, I mean, I was you know, observed, called names. I had a black friend, a girlfriend there who, she was called a pig. I mean, it was just horrid. You know, the overt kind of both sexism and racism. And I mean, it was a dreadful place. But certainly for me as a female, I felt very oppressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the boss had a pinup sort of in his office, pinup calendar. Those are the good old days, you know.
Yeah. Well, not so good old days, but right. in that regard, but right. still.
Mad Men days almost. Yeah. I'm that old.
But it does seem like this is something that the regular nature of it is something that's hard for men anyway to kind of get to fully understand.
Yeah, to get a hold
to get a hold of what that kind of constant
and I
abuse
think that
you're talking about.
What it feels like is hard to imagine. So I heard this, I don't know, it was an experiment or some meeting recently, and I think this was a really good descriptor. Mm-hmm. It was a male and female meeting. And the men in the audience were asked, when was the last time you felt afraid? Mm. You know, and they're like racking their brains. Well, I was in sixth grade and there was this bully and blah, 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 blah. You know, and then they asked the women, you know, essentially, when was the last time you felt afraid? Mm. And, you know, basically it came down to most of the women raised their hands to that they had felt afraid walking across the parking lot that night. To get to the meeting.
Yeah.
That I think being a weaker gender, you hear these things and it's frightening. You know, especially even though, you know, you try to laugh it off or something, but there's something inside that goes, ooh, and it's not just ooh with an equal. It's ooh with somebody who is bigger, stronger. Mm. You know, there's always this slight feeling of threat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a friend one time, I'd go running in a park near my house at night, and I had a coworker, she was asking me about that, and she said, I could never do that. And I was like, well, why not? It was one of the first times that I had started to have that conversation that you're talking about, because it didn't make sense. It's as she explained it, she explained something very similar to what you were talking about, that there was always this element of fear that existed for her when she went out by herself. That how I was both taken aback by and astonished by that would be the case, that she did not feel safe, not because the park was a dangerous park necessarily, but just because it was she would be alone and it would be night,
right?
And there would be some kind of danger there for her that she would feel afraid.
Exactly. Let alone the sense that there's so much having to do with this idea of sexual assault, you know, the accusations. Oh, did you get that promotion because you slept with the boss? I mean, business is rough, and especially if you're a female. I mean, there is a lot of this kind of thing going around.
Yeah, I think there's some statistics on it to try to help get around it. So every 98 seconds, an American is sexually assaulted.
Ugh.
Every 98 seconds, every 8 minutes, that victim is a child, and only 6 out of every 1,000 perpetrators will go to prison.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And that's sexual assault.
That is crazy.
And there's some, you know, we want to make sure, too, that when we're talking about it, that people know what we're talking about when we use these terms.
But we're talking about a range of things, right? Everything from rape to date rape to inappropriate touching to childhood sexual assault to even verbal assault, even catcalling. I mean, I think if you're a man, you may think, oh, that's totally harmless. The construction guy is way across the street and he's whistling at you. But if you're in an area that, you know, you're not safe or you don't know that area, if you're just walking down the street and somebody catcalls, I know it's hard to understand as a male because you live in a more physically strong body, but, you know, it's a little frightening. It's like, okay, you know, they know all each other. They're all working together and it's not flattering. It's a little scary.
There's a great Instagram account called Dear Catcallers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, you need to look it up. Especially maybe if you want to kind of understand just the deluge of these kind of things that happen. It's a forget her name, but I believe she lives in the Netherlands, and she every time she was walking down the street that somebody catcalls her, she takes a selfie with them and writes out what they. Has said
yeah, that's awesome.
underneath there, and some of those things are just when you hear just, oh, she got catcalled,
mm-hmm.
when you hear the specifics of what is being said, and these guys that don't think anything of it because they are, every one of them to a T is smiling in the picture.
Smirking.
It is dehumanizing.
Yes.
Brené Brown in her new book talks about this a lot, which is in a very brilliant way. She talks about how we make somebody the enemy when we dehumanize them, and that our word, she talks about how much our words matter because we start to believe them. So like you mentioned, being somebody being called a pig,
yeah,
or even being the words that we use about women, even something like she's a real fox, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's probably an older term, but
it's an older term.
It's an older term,
yeah,
but something like that.
It's definitely a term I recognize.
Yeah. But yeah. You're making the, any term like that, that we use, we are literally equating women to animals,
yeah.
And we're taking the humanity away from them, and it makes it much easier to make compromises on how we would treat a animal versus how we would treat a human.
Yeah,
very much.
I mean, broads, right? She's a broad. She's a bitch.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, there's like, you know,
literally a female dog. Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's all that kind of stuff that does make them the other. So we don't have to see them as human. Let's come back with our stats, Adam, and talk about that some more and talk about Me Too. And we're just hoping out there that you are not one of the Me Toos.
Wanting sex again. How to rediscover desire and heal a sexless marriage by certified sex therapist Lori Watson.
Each chapter is designed to fix one of the problems that cause low libido, from early marriage through the childbearing years, even all the way through menopause. I've also had men read it and tell me that for them it was the most hopeful thing they read about resolving sexual problems.
Look for Wanting Sex Again on Amazon.com. You can also talk to Lori Watson for therapy in person or via Skype.
I offer couples counseling and sex therapy, and I think about both aspects of the relationship, emotional intimacy and sexual technique, and that combination together helps marriages be happy.
Improve your sex and improve your relationship with Awakening Center for Couples and Intimacy. Find out more at awakenloveandsex.com. Awaken what's possible.
It is one of my great joys in life to be able to really help individuals and couples find strength in their relationships and really find hope again.
Licensed marriage and family therapist, Dr. Adam Matthews from Matthews Counseling.
I work with a wide variety of issues, including depression and anxiety, marital issues, issues with adolescence. I believe that therapy should be designed around you, that it should be personalized to who you are and to your unique situation.
Therapy is available in office, online, and by phone.
I want therapy to be comfortable for everyone. At our office, you'll find that we sit around a fireplace in deep, comfortable chairs, look at the problem differently, and offer practical solutions for you to take home and utilize outside of the therapy room.
Schedule today and rediscover hope.
You can find me on the web at matthewscounseling.net, Matthews with one T. You can contact us through email or phone and find a lot of resources on our website, matthewscounseling.net.
Okay, we're back talking about the movement of Me Too and publicizing the gross amount of sexual harassment, sexual assault that women go through. And again, my heart too, because I see so many men who have also been sexually abused as children and, you know, as older men, as adolescents, certainly, you know, my heart goes out to every sexual assault victim. But you were correcting me, and please say that on the air.
Well, that we are talking about the, we want to use good terms. And if you look at www.rainn.org,
rainn.org,
which is an organization that has a lot of statistics on there, and they advocate.
They're a national statistic. What does the acronym stand for?
The acronym stands for Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. It's the world's largest anti-sexual assault.
Okay, so they're collecting data.
They're raising awareness. But when we use the terms, it's important to know what we're talking about. When we talk about sexual assault, types of sexual assault include attempted rape, fondling or unwanted sexual touching, forcing a victim to perform sexual acts like oral sex, any penetration of the victim's body, which would then be categorized as rape. So rape is is one of the more violent forms of sexual assault, but it's not the only form of sexual assault that is out there. We talk about catcalls and things that people say in workplaces. We're generally talking about sexual harassment, which is equally as can be equally as devastating in similar ways and in some cases dissimilar ways, oftentimes because it is more pervasive, right?
And I realize I'm mixing up my terms. So I think, you know, when you get passionate, you just blend everything together. And for people who are arguing with us and saying it's not that prevalent or you're making a bigger deal out of it or you're not being distinct enough, they're probably right with me right now, you know. So we need to use better language.
And it's important to be distinct, but it's also important to know that, like, all of this that we're talking about is a violation. Right. It is.
On different levels,
but all of it is dehumanizing. A lot of it has different effects. All of this affects each person differently, but in very similar ways as well. Just some other statistics. 1 out of every 6 American women has been the victim of an attempted or completed rape in her lifetime.
That is mind-boggling. Unbelievable.
1 out of every 6.
1 out of 6.
That just boggles the mind.
Yeah, it's just hideous.
And the group that has the highest risk is women aged 12 to 34.
Yeah.
Right? So it's happening when people are young.
And it happens at puberty, right? Mm-hmm. When they suddenly, I mean, just imagine if you have not been sexually assaulted, God forbid, that, you know, you're a new adolescent. And, you know, I can't even tell you the number of stories I've sat through of young budding adolescent young women who have been fondled by relatives, stepfathers, uncles, you know, and it's like, that's your first experience, right? As your body is developing and your first experience is, you know, sexual violation. It's just hideous.
Yeah. And to your point as well, about 3% of American men or 1 in 33 have experienced an attempted or completed rape. Mm-hmm. And 1 out of every 10 rape victims is male.
God. That, and probably some of that higher in prison, right? In incarceration, I don't know if they have those stats.
Yeah. I mean, and you can, I think that there's some obvious things that happen here and some non-obvious things, but just real quickly, I know stats are pretty boring.
No, I love
information,
stats. Give me stats.
94% of women who are raped experience symptoms of PTSD during the 2 weeks that follow the rape.
Right.
And 30% report symptoms of PTSD 9 months after the rape.
I can't believe that it's only 30%, frankly.
That seems low to me as well, but that's the stats. The stats that they have.
Yeah.
But 33% of women who are raped contemplate suicide, and 13% of those women actually attempt suicide. Right. And so there's some things that are just right in your face. Like, and those are just, that is just of one aspect of sexual assault.
Right. What about the hesitation that young girls have after they've been touched, right as their body matures? Like, how do they then sort of mature into true sexuality for themselves, like when their very first experience is being violated?
You know, I think there's lots of stats that we could mention, but they're out there. Go look them up if this is hard for you to get your mind around. I mean, stats help in one way. Listening to the experiences of women that you know would be another way. But I think we also have to address, Lori, you said something other, that the part of this Me Too movement is getting it out in public, right? It's not hiding it behind closed doors anymore. And I think we maybe need to address why it is. Obviously, it's a personal thing for the person that's been assaulted to reveal that. But there's a lot of shame around this.
There is.
And I think that is really misplaced, and it keeps a lot of the voices quiet and hidden. And that's one of the powers of this movement, I think. But, what are your thoughts around what happens and why it becomes such a thing that is so quiet and not talked about more often?
I think this is part of victimization,
right. Is
that you barely want to acknowledge it to yourself, you know, and you don't feel powerful enough to combat it, right? As a child, you're dependent, you know, you just got to take it.
Yeah.
You know, as a young adult, maybe if you're struggling in your career, you know, you just don't dare. Like, people have been saying, well, why all these actresses? Why didn't they come forward? You know, they were powerful, they were making money, but I mean, this guy, you know, had a great deal more power over them in terms of potentially ruining them in their industry.
Listen, power dynamics are real.
They are. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it can be the manager at Chick-fil-A.
Right.
You know, it can be a small power dynamic that people become afraid somehow or another, I'm going to be ruined in some way or disadvantaged in some way.
Or the other thing is, I think, and this is where we have to, I think personally have to start for each one of us, is I think they are afraid to come forward because they are afraid they will not be believed.
And they will not be supported.
Yes. And because it happens so often when victims of sexual assault or even harassment, when they say something, the initial response that they get from somebody is that is disbelief.
Yeah.
Or maybe worst of all, inaction.
Yeah. And I think the idea of raising awareness is we all need to fight it.
Mm.
You know, when you see it happening, if it's not happening to you, you need to fight it.
That's
you need to speak up for the women around you. You need to say, hey, take down that stupid poster.
Yeah.
You know, that's offensive. And that's offensive to me because it's offensive to women to have that poster.
Or you need to call out. You need to call out your friend for making that crude sexual joke.
Exactly.
Or using dehumanizing language.
Right. And you know what? I'm pointing the finger on my Facebook. I also have typed in, "You knew."
Hmm.
You know, because I know in my case, a lot of people knew. You know, the uncle who molested me. You know, it was not severe. You know, but he touched my breasts. It's like a bunch of cousins and aunts knew about that.
Yeah, but see, even in even what you just said there, saying it's not severe, it's a violation.
It's a violation.
It's a severe violation, and we got to quit comparing what happens. I think that's another reason is that people go, well, it wasn't that big a deal.
It wasn't that big a deal.
Or it happens to everybody.
You
know,
exactly.
And like, I think that those type of things happen, create this culture where we can't say what is really happening.
Right. And I would say, so one confession, you know, as I wrote that this morning on Facebook about you knew, when you point the finger, right, there's four pointing back at yourself. And I realized fairly recently in my life and career that I had a radio manager or owner. It wasn't the manager. I think it was the owner or something. Mm. He was a higher upper, you know, and he talked to me at some party and he said, you know, what I'd really like you to do is get the other girl host of the show to open up about her sex life. Mm-hmm. Because I go on this show and I do Q&A, which is kind of like foreplay. It's fun, but it's not salacious. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I just remember thinking, ooh, that's so voyeuristic and that's so gross that you're like wanting her to open up. But I didn't say anything.
Mm.
I didn't say that's creepy, dude. You know, like I should have. And so I think even me, when I'm so aware of this, right?
Yeah.
I work with it every day. It's like we all have to become more aware of how women can be violated. And certainly, again, I got to throw it in boys as well.
Yeah. And I think there's also the sense of that we don't want to deal with the overwhelming nature of it a lot of times.
Yeah.
Right. Like it feels so big and so scary and so painful
mm-hmm.
to deal with that we just want to deny that there could be that much abuse or pain or what you said, ickiness, like just the creep factor that is. We don't want to admit that this exists in our world. But I think we tell couples this. I know you tell couples this. You can't have goodness in your relationship unless you go through the painful stuff.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
the hard stuff. Right. And I don't think we can have a real conversation until we begin to admit the prevalent nature of it. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's what this movement is doing as well.
And I would like to say, you know, just a word of hope, certainly for people and women who have been sexually assaulted. You know, we work with that every day of the week. Right.
Mm.
And we see healing and we see people who overcome post-traumatic stress syndrome. You know, we see people who grow from these experiences and come into whole sexual relationships.
Yes.
But I think what you said of being believed by your partner
mm-hmm.
about the impact that it had on you, not being minimized, like, you know, and thank you for not minimizing me.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. You know, but I think, you know, not being minimized and hearing what your partner has to say about it, like, really, that happened to you? How did you feel?
Yeah.
Not having a judgment about how they ought to feel or how they ought to get over it, but just how did it happen? That's one way you can help. And also standing up for it when you see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
And it takes And it takes a lot of courage, right? So
it does.
Kudos to everybody that's putting Me Too out there and admitting to this, like, kudos to you and to every other woman, every man that's doing it too. Like, there's a lot of shame around it, and there is misplaced shame, right? Because it's on the perpetrator, not the victim.
That's right. And I think that's what talking about it does, is it breaks the secret. It breaks the shame.
Yeah.
Okay, you're listening to 4Play Radio Sex Therapy, an important topic today with Dr. Adam Matthews, our couples counselor, and I'm Lori Watson, your sex therapist. Thanks for listening.
Hey, help us stay on top here at 4Play. We'd love it if you would subscribe and share it with your friends. And please take one sec and rate and review us. Thanks so much.